We really encourage people regularly to read the scriptures. We've got our own EBC Bible reading app that takes you through half the Bible one year and the next half of the Bible the other year. And so we're going to have some reading from scripture this morning that will inform and shape our conversation together. So it's from Mark chapter 8, beginning at verse 11. And this is just after Jesus has done the second of his mass feeding miracles, the feeding of the 4,000. And it goes like this from Mark chapter 8, verse 11. The Pharisees came and began to question Jesus. To test him, they asked him for a sign from heaven. He sighed deeply and said, "Why does this generation ask for a sign? Truly, I tell you, no sign will be given it." Then he left them, got back into the boat, and crossed to the other side. The disciples had forgotten to bring bread, except for one loaf they had with them in the boat. "Be careful," Jesus warned them. "Watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees and of that of Herod." They discussed this with one another and said, "It is because we have no bread." Aware of their discussion, Jesus asked them, "Why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts still hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see and ears but fail to hear? And don't you remember when I broke five loaves for 5,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up?" 12, they replied. "And when I broke seven loaves for the 4,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up?" They answered, 7. He said to them, "Do you still not understand?" Many of us, when we hear this passage, we'll be resonating strongly with the inadequacy of the disciples. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand or anything like that, but that's often a thing, isn't it? When that's real life to me, I feel like my Christian walk is inadequate in some way. I'm just sort of bumbling my way on, or I feel like I'm just frozen or stuck at a particular level. And I've just sort of got used to that fact. I've settled into this is just my lot, this is my spot. I'm an adequate follower of Jesus, and that's all there is. And we get used to, and we get acculturated to our current state of inadequacy. And we're a bit like these guys here that we just read about, who were at a stage in their life where they were stuck in inadequacy in following Jesus. But then we think about, well, of those inadequate people, one of them was Peter. And he ended up writing some of the Bible. And so we have evidence that they didn't stay in that spot. And then sometimes, and I'm just going to read a bit here from a book called A Testament of Devotion that I've posted about in the hub. It says this: "We have hints that there is a way of life vastly richer and deeper than all this hurried existence. A life of unhurried serenity and peace and power, if only we could slip over into that. We have seen and known some people who seem to have found this deep centre of living, where the fretful calls of life are integrated, where no as well as yes can be said with confidence." And Richard Foster, who was writing that introduction, said his own inadequacy had been found out. But he had also glimpsed a possibility of a less inadequate future. And you see, that's what I want to encourage us to have today. Not just to be satisfied with our current state of our spiritual walk. Because God has an intention and a design for you to be more than that. And we've talked about it before in Romans 8. It says that your destiny, believe it or not, is to be conformed to the image of Jesus. That's what God's working on in your life. That's God's best future for you. And God knows how to do it. He's done it with rough people like Peter. He's done it with violent people like Paul. And God is working at that in your life too. And so I hope today that you don't just, that you lift your eyes a bit and you don't like be satisfied with your current state, but you be inspired by your future state. For many of us, it has been, you know, we've been hanging out to be able to move into this building. And we wanted to get into it just as soon as we possibly could. And in fact, we've got into it on the day before Christmas last year, but we still don't have things like we don't have hot water and we don't have a few other things, but we're here. We wanted to get here as soon as we could. And when we truly grasp what it's like to have the with God life, to have that spiritual connection with God and the peace and the power and the joy that is, surely you and I want to get there as soon as we can. It happens in so many other areas of our life. You know, when we're in school, we want to get to university as soon as we can. When we're at university, we want to get to our job as soon as we can. And when we're working and we're planning holidays, we want to get to our holidays just as soon as we can. Well, we're already good at being motivated by our futures. Let's also be good at being motivated by our future Christ-likeness. In this passage, and we're going to keep reading, Mark deliberately records a story of Jesus healing a blind person. It really happened, but it's also a metaphor or a picture of Jesus wanting to fix their spiritual blindness. They came to Bethesda, and some people brought a blind man and begged Jesus to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand and led him outside the village. When he had spit on the man's eyes and put his hands on him, Jesus asked, "Do you see anything?" He looked up and said, "I see people. They look like trees walking around." Once more, Jesus put his hands on the man's eyes. Then his eyes were opened, his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. Jesus sent him home saying, "Don't even go into the village." Now, I think there's a few things we can draw from this. It's the actual thing that happened. But it's Jesus taking the initiative to heal someone's blindness. Jesus took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the village. Any spiritual growth that's happening in your life is because God is already taking the initiative. All the blind man had to do was follow on with Jesus and let him put the weird spit on his eyes. But the other thing I love about it is it was a two-stage miracle, right? Many other miracles that Jesus did, the person instantly healed. But this is like a picture. Often our spiritual blindness isn't instantly removed. Our Christian inadequacy isn't instantly taken away. There's a process. And we may feel inadequate today, and we know that one day we're going to be like Jesus, but it's going to usually, for most of us, be an incremental process day by day and week by week and month by month and year by year as we cooperate with what Jesus is doing in our lives. And you see the interactive nature of it. Jesus asked him, "What do you see?" And they said, "Well, I can sort of see stuff." It's okay, let's go and do some more work on it. So you can imagine Jesus saying, "Well, how do you think you're going with your spiritual life?" "Oh, yeah, I can sort of, I'm a bit better than I was a couple of months ago." "Okay, let's keep working on it." And this story of the healing of the blind man sets up the next couple of chapters in the Gospel of Mark. And we see in detail how Jesus actually went about helping those first disciples move forward, and so they became a bit less inadequate. And I'm not going to read it all out because it would take too long, but I encourage you to go and read this passage from Mark chapter 8 verse 11 through to the end of chapter 10 sometime later today. And the first thing that Jesus does when he switches from having healed to, and Mark records what Jesus did, Jesus and his disciples went to the villages around Caesarea Philippi, and on the way he asked them, "Who do people say that I am?" And then they answered, and then he asked them, and who do you say that I am? The first thing that is required for us to move forward in our spiritual growth is to have a fresh appraisal of Jesus. And just think, well, who do people around you think Jesus is? And what is he to them? And then ask the question of yourself. Who is Jesus to me? Maybe not in theory. Maybe like you can give the right Sunday school answers to the question. But ask, I'm not going to ask you to tell anyone else, but ask yourself honestly, who is Jesus to me? Really? Am I convinced of his goodness and power and intentions? Do I actually want to be around him as much as possible? Am I open to learning new things about Jesus? Because in the very next few verses, Jesus says, great, you recognize I'm the Messiah, but guess what? I'm going to Jerusalem to be crucified. And that was a head spin for them. And then Jesus took a few of them up on the mountain and he was transfigured and he was suddenly glowing. And then there was Elijah and Moses, and there was the voice from heaven said, this is my son whom I love, in him I am well pleased, listen to him. The first step that Jesus took in moving the disciples forward was to get them to reflect and think about and be exposed to some fresh dimensions of who Jesus is. What God's on about. And so you might feel like you're stuck in your Christian walking. You simply ask God, show me something fresh about yourself, God. Reveal something more to me. Help me to understand a bit more about who you are and what you're like. Because that transfiguration was Jesus actually inviting them into his prayer life. And so one of the things you could simply do is you could just meditate on the transfiguration. And by that I mean read the passage. It's in the first three Gospels. But in Mark, it's in the beginning of Mark chapter 9. And just imagine, read it over and over again. Imagine yourself in the scene. Imagine what the disciples are thinking and feeling. Imagine what you would be thinking and feeling. And I love chapter 9, verse 8, where in the midst of the cloud and the voice and everything else, suddenly when they looked around, they no longer saw anyone with them except Jesus. Now, that was true physically, but I like it. I think it's also Jesus was now the center of their attention. So the reflecting on who Jesus is and the entering into a devotional practice, and they have a fresh encounter with Jesus. And then they begin asking a bunch of questions about John the Baptist and all those sort of things. And they go down from the mountain and they join in with the other disciples. And the other disciples have been trying to cast a demon out of this demon-possessed person and are unable to do that. Do you ever feel like there's things in your Christian life that you are unable to do? Well, what did these disciples do when they were confronted with their own inadequacy? Well, they went to Jesus, and he says, and they said in chapter 9, verse 28, after Jesus had gone indoors, his disciples asked him privately, why couldn't we drive it out? In your whatever it's been inadequate in your life, whether it's a prayer life or hearing God or being patient or whatever else, have you ever thought, maybe I should just ask Jesus, why can't I do that? Hey, Jesus, why can't I be less angry? Hey, Jesus, why can't I actually tell people about you? Hey, Jesus. Why am I so worried about my finances? Hey, Jesus, why am I finding it hard to forgive? And Jesus enters into the two-way dialogue. You see, this growing less inadequate in our Christian lives, growing a little bit more adequate on the journey towards Christ-likeness, is an interactive thing. God respects you enough to want to do it, to be a two-way thing, not just like an injection that you have no control over. God respects you as an individual and a person so much that he wants to do it interactively. And then Jesus goes on and he has some further conversations in the rest of chapter 9 with his disciples. Now, in a few moments' time, I'm going to ask you to do something here in the auditorium, and it'll be very low bar. It won't be threatening at all. So I'm just setting you up for it, and there's going to be some spiritual dimensions to it if you like. But if you don't like, that's perfectly fine too. You can do this thing I'm going to ask you to do without any spiritual dimensions at all. But I first want you to think about, if Jesus walked in through those doors, you know, when the door slammed behind him and we all went around and we looked at Jesus, I just want you to imagine in your eyes, in your mind, not in your eyes, in your mind, how would you welcome Jesus? Like, after you got over the shock and the question, is it really Jesus and all that sort of stuff, right? The disciples often had that question, like in the end of John, in John chapter 21. But after you got over that, how would you welcome Jesus? What would be your attitude? What would you do physically? I just want you to imagine it. Would you walk up to Jesus? Would you run up to Jesus? Would you wait for him to come to you? Would you be a bit nervous? Like, would your hand be a bit sweaty? And would you have a smile on your face? Would you be fascinated by him? Just imagine what it would be like to welcome Jesus. Okay, now we're getting to the thing that I want you to do. I want you to practice this. I want you to turn to the person next to you and I want you to welcome them as if you were welcoming Jesus. Now, if you're not into being spiritual, that's perfectly fine. Just say hi and just welcome. The person next to you will have no idea whether you're trying to be spiritual or not. All they'll know is that you're welcoming them, right? But what I want you to do is I want you to turn to the person next to them and if you want to, just welcome them as if they were Jesus. Right, so just do that now. Just if you're isolated like Monty here, go and sit next to someone and welcome them. Fantastic. All right, that's enough. That's enough welcoming. There's a bit too much welcoming going on here. Now we're going to... There's a second thing. Now, like, most of you would probably have found it easy to welcome the person next to you, right? But and imagine they were Jesus, right? But imagine that person that you were welcoming was actually your archenemy. Or someone who had recently betrayed you or let you down. Right? And you think, how on earth am I going to welcome them as if they were Jesus? Well, I want you to sort of flip it in your mind and you okay, well, there's no way that I can do that, God, but I want you to do that through me. Jesus, I want you to do that through me. I want to help me welcome this difficult person as if they were Jesus, by doing it through me. It's beyond my capacity. I need you to help me to do that. Now, so imagine the person next to you is now your archenemy. And now have another go at relying on God to welcome them. Now, just pretend it's the same as before. We don't want to have... If you do actually have an archenemy here, you know, we don't want you to give that away or anything like that. You can sort that out later. Okay, go... 20 seconds, just welcome someone else, but say, I'm going to try and do it with God's power and God's resources. Ready? Go. Someone else. Yeah, why not? Alrighty, take a seat, that'd be great. You see, the disciples in their inadequacy were having a debate about who amongst them was the greatest. Oh, I'm better than you. I'm better than you. No, I'm better than you. Oh, I'm better than you. And Jesus told them this in Mark chapter 9, verse 36. He took a little child whom he placed among them. Taking the child in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one of these children in my name welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me does not welcome me, but the one who sent me." Now, I have been deliberately trying to do this as often as I can in the last 12 months. Before I meet someone, okay, I want to try and meet them as if they're Jesus. And I want to try and meet them not on my own resources, but with Jesus' resources. That's what it means to welcome them in someone's name, is to go on their behalf and with their resources. Right? You know, if a wealthy person sends you to pick up their Mercedes-Benz from the service station, right? You go on their behalf and with their resources, and the service station gives you the Mercedes-Benz. Amazing. Right? Now, I don't do it all the time, and many, I might go a few days by forgetting about it, but let me tell you, this is one of the more significant spiritual practices that I have engaged in. And I intend to keep in trying to engage in it for the rest of my life. Out of all of the spiritual practices that Jesus might have told his disciples, like the micro habits that Jesus told his disciples, this is about the only one that's got in. It must be that important. It reminds me to be less controlling, like as if I could control Jesus if I actually met Jesus. It reminds me to actually see the person. The world might think they're a nobody, you know, an insignificant person, they're not a celebrity, I don't care. But if they're like Jesus, well, they're more captivating than the brightest celebrity or the most famous TikTok person. And if I'm trying to do it not in my own resources but in God's resources, then I'm practicing every time, not just to do that, but to do everything with God's resources. And so Jesus, the one who is the expert at turning inadequate followers to more adequate followers, gets them to reflect on who he was. They have a fresh devotional encounter. He listens to them and responds to them when they ask, "Why couldn't I?" questions. And he gives them things to do, little, apparently simple things to do that have deeply spiritually forming outcomes. And all of this happens in the context of Jesus' small group. All of this happens in the context of Jesus' small group. Not in a Sunday service. Not even in some big missional outreach thing. But in the context of a small group. And that has been one of the rich things that's happened in the life of our church over the last couple of years. Some development of some small groups with a high number of people involved in them. And some of them have already started again for this year, and other ones hopefully will be kicking off in the next little while. And we want everybody to have the chance to be in a group like that. And so if you are not in a small group and you would like to be in one, let me know. And we'll see what we can organise. We are committed to this. Jesus did it with his inadequate disciples, and so the least we can do is see if we can do it for each other. And some of the things that people have talked about from their experience of their small group in the last year was they really enjoyed being able to get into the Bible and getting to know it a bit more and getting to know other people a bit more and, in fact, experiencing the presence of God in that small group. Some people said as well, like, I find it difficult to get into the Bible, but this is a discipline that helps me actually do that. Someone said that the last few years have been pretty rough and isolating. And so the coming together has reignited spiritual conversations, and there's been some prayer for each other and healing for each other, and wounds are hurting less as they hear God's voice and they pray for each other. Some people said, we're getting better at not giving unsolicited advice. That's fantastic. And that we work together with God through our weeks to provide support for the strong winds that blow. At times it's a sacrifice to attend our groups, but I always leave feeling doubly blessed. And so I encourage you to re-engage with your small group from last year and try and engage at a deeper level, maybe a bit more honest level, maybe a bit more risk-taking level, maybe a bit where there's a bit more encouragement and accountability for you. And that's what small groups are really great at. This is what I'm struggling with. This is what I'm going to try and do. And your group says, we'll pray for you. We'll cheer you on. How did you go? When they see you next time. Celebrate the wins. Encourage us when something else knocked us off track. If you're not in a group, ask to be in one. There's a question that will now be live in the hub. You can just see that and you can message me directly in the hub. Or you can speak to me afterwards. Or you can ring me or assail me, whichever other way you want to do that. Or maybe there's someone else here you know is already in a group. You can speak to them. How would I get into a group? But we'd love you to be in one. We describe our small groups as communities of friends that encourage Christ-likeness. And all of those words are important. It's a community of friends. It's encouraging and it actually helps nurture our Christ-likeness. And so I'd love you to think about, do I want to be in a group? Might I be in a group? Yes, I'm going to be in a group. I'm going to more fully embrace being in that group and see what God does in my life. Let's pray. God, we know that moving us from inadequacy to adequacy is your job. It's your heart, it's your vision, and you know how to do it, God, for each one of us. Help us to see the greatness of that vision. How being moving from where we are to where you're calling us to be is the best thing. And that getting there as fast as we can, God, is the most valuable thing that we could do. Lord, I pray that you would bless our small groups this year. You'd help us to tweak them, rearrange them, include new people, start new ones, whatever we need to do. Lord, that you would bless them and that they would be rich places where people find community and friendship and encouragement and growing Christ-likeness. In Jesus' name, amen.